The University Tower chimes, bringing another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. A man who left ho-hos in my mailbox in the main office of the Chem Building, Professor Chuck Hokins.
Hey, did you enjoy them?
They were delicious.
They were for you. I saw them in the machine. I said, oh. Got to get these for Matt.
It said enjoy on them, and I took them out. I said, does anybody know who brought these here? Jane's like, I don't know. Well, I just started eating them. You know, they were delicious.
We talked about ho-hos the other day.
That's right. Thank you so much, Chuck.
By the way, go Tigers.
Oh, yes.
Going Tigers.
Going Tigers. Just keep on going. Very, very fun times here now in Motown.
Right.
So fun that Professor Jeff Boats could not contain himself. He needed a new hairstyle.
Absolutely.
And now that he has one.
In Major League, I believe it's called the Veg Head.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Amazing.
Exactly. So what's going on in your world, Jeff?
Oh, not too much. We're enjoying this break between the Tigers ALCS and the World Series coming up at the time of this taping. And, you know, I play in this league full of baseball players who would love to give the Tigers a scrimmage and keep them, you know, fresh, you know, during these few days off, you know. But I don't think that's going to happen.
No, but did you hear that? You've actually got the minor leaguers coming up scrimmaging them.
Really?
Nice. Yeah, right, I hear that.
Yeah.
Oh, Keep sharp.
Yeah, they're, was
really?
It Brendan Bosch?
Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah, they got a bunch of the Toledo guys coming up.
I'm a little heartbroken. I don't get to catch Verlander, but
He was on the roster during the year.
Yep, so does
that's
Inge.
Right.
Inge? We traded him mid-season?
Wow. He
still gets a ring?
That'll be awesome.
He gets some type of a share. I know they got to vote him. That's what I heard.
He gets like one stone or something like that. But he gets like a half a ring.
I don't know.
It's an earring.
Did you wear half a ring, Professor Dan Maggio?
Did I wear half a ring? Yes.
On your finger. You were holding your ear.
I don't have any ring.
Have
I don't wear jewelry at all.
Yeah, you don't really. You don't.
Does that shock you?
No. But I can also infer from the questions you asked earlier and right now, you're not the biggest baseball fan.
I am now.
Okay, that's great.
Because I want to share.
So everyone
make some room on the bandwagon for Dan here. We can squeeze him on.
Squeeze him in.
I went to my first Tigers game this season.
At Comerica Park.
So I actually went to a regular season game.
Awesome.
Great people.
Did they
watching.
Win?
Yes, they did.
Hey.
It was great. Actually, it was a good game. And I could see. Remember I asked you?
Yeah, I remember this. That's great. That's great. Fantastic.
But what still amazes me is from the time you walk in to the time you get to your seat, there's 1,000 ways to try to get your money.
Oh, yeah.
It's overwhelming.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Food, most important of all.
Yes.
We know.
Drinks.
A little bit
raffles.
Dreary the other night in Motown as people, I understand they did just tens of thousands of dollars of concessions in the game that got canceled even before the first pitch was thrown. So,
there were conspiracy theories talking about how the reason why they waited so long to cancel it because they'd cooked all those hot dogs, man.
Yeah.
They had all that pizza.
Nothing to do with Sabathia at all.
No.
Right, Professor Jason Roach of Communication Studies?
As far as I know, that's right.
As far as I understand.
We do have a graduate from Communication Studies who specializes in conspiracy theories, however, so perhaps we could ask George
Newry. I bet he'd have something to say about it. Absolutely.
You might think so.
Very interesting. If the Yankees had gone on to win 4 more games, I probably would have raised a little more cane than that.
Well, if you're going to ask George Newry, you better do it before December 22nd, 2012.
Oh, that's right. End of the world.
Well, he's going to be live on the air all night that night, watching the end of days roll.
In.
Is he really?
That's what he says.
Oh, that's awesome. The stock market's going to open on Monday like it usually does. Professor Dave Chow, of course, College for Creative Studies. You were downtown middle of all the clowns, right?
Yes. It was a good time. We could actually watch part of it from our building.
Very cool.
It just trickles up to us just enough. And then I remember one of my colleagues was actually having a critique downstairs, and I'd yell down the score to him. Constantly.
Awesome.
As soon as they scored, I yelled to them. So it was a good time.
Awesome. My colleague, Mary Lou Caspers, actually had to teach for the 3 hours of the game last night, starting at 4:30, and she allowed the students to interrupt her at any point during the lecture with updates. And they all were paying way more attention to their phones and devices than the lecturer could probably do that.
They're doing it with a purpose now.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can fax the profs at 313-993-1166, or you can send the questions USPS to the College of Liberal Arts and Education, University of Detroit Mercy, 4001 West McNichols Road, Detroit, Michigan, 48221-3038. When last we left the profs, they were in the middle of a wonderful set of questions sent by our friend Frank Burrows of Valencia, California. We were at about number 11 of 20, and we'll see how much further we can get through these questions today. They're all over the map. I believe you remember our questions to the tune of, what is Michael J. Fox's middle name, which was Andrew, of course, and what company introduced the Wonder Bra in 1994, Sara Lee, which confused me primarily on top of many other people. What word was used 161 times in the movie The Big Lebowski?
Dude.
The dude abides, indeed. Absolutely. Great movie. What TV show's original working title was Woozle World? I don't think I can even say it without
Woozle? Wayne's
Woozle
World?
Woozle World. No. No, Davis, this was a PBS Jim Henson production.
Sesame Street?
That wasn't Sesame Street. Came after that.
Yes.
Fraggle Rock.
Had a very well-known theme song. Fraggle Rock is the correct answer. Absolutely, Chuck. Absolutely. Down in Fraggle Rock. What are the only two countries in the world where divorce is illegal? Kind of interesting.
It's got to be Arabic country?
No.
No.
No, actually, they're both
men
extremely
divorce women anytime
Catholic.
They like.
Ireland? Vatican City.
Vatican City is one of them. That
Ireland?
Sense. Not Ireland, no.
New Jersey?
No.
New Jersey.
No. Very Catholic country?
Very Catholic countries, yes.
South American?
It's sort of difficult to say. I'm thinking Asia and Oceania here.
There are three of them or two?
Two. Vatican
City
is one.
Yeah.
Got
one. Yeah.
And the other one is...
Philippines?
The Philippines, yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Philippines, for whatever reason, you cannot get divorced there, at least not legally. There you go. I see where this line of questioning is going, Frank. In what state was Tennessee Williams born? Great question.
Probably Georgia.
You're in the right wheelhouse.
Alabama?
It wasn't
Alabama.
Tennessee. Keep going.
Mississippi, Louisiana?
Mississippi, nice. Yes. That's great. It's
Mississippi,
sort of like...
Williams just didn't have the same ring. Yeah.
Well, you know, Indiana Jones, same sort of thing.
That's right.
Why was the very first Star Wars movie given a PG rating as opposed to the G that was requested by the filmmaker?
Was there a kiss?
There was no kiss.
They cut off that guy's arm, that alien's arm.
No, there was no arm cutting, although there was arm cutting in the movie,
but that wasn't the reason.
Bad acting.
That's graphic, but it happens off screen. I think that was the thing that made G versus PG back in the day.
Yes.
Well, yep. Didn't him and the girl, the kiss,
was it a language thing?
No, it wasn't a language thing.
No, none of that.
This is America. We only give ratings based on violence.
There's too much violence.
Well, you're getting closer. I'm not exactly sure how to
implication of death.
I remember.
The big rock.
Absolutely.
The big rock.
It was Luke's Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen's
chart
being shown, which is a pretty big deal.
But that's the best part
of
the movie.
I know. He doesn't turn away, right?
There actually was. I heard that the set, that they're actually rebuilding it or something like that.
In Tunisia?
Tunisia. They're actually refurbing it.
Could be a tourist attraction.
Yeah, big deal.
Could work in New Zealand, so.
Increase Tunisia's gross domestic product.
Or the tourism?
Pretty good joke on this year's Simpsons Halloween episode, even though it was tepid overall. At some point, there's a Back to the Future storyline. Bart gets in a Chevy Volt, I believe, and goes back in time. And he pops out in 1974, and his first remark is, a world where nothing's been tampered with by George Lucas. Pretty good joke. Which actress's much younger boyfriend, Rob Camaletti, was dubbed Bagel Boy by the press?
Liza Minnelli.
No. Who's getting close, though.
Rob, what was?
His name is Rob Camaletti. Remember this when I was growing up. Early 80s, I want to say.
No.
No, not Liz Taylor.
It's not Demi Moore.
Think,
no. That was
think one name actress.
Cher.
Cher. Yeah, that's Cher. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Bagel Boy. I must have missed something. Okay.
I heard that one.
Yeah. What does the G stand for the band Booker T and the MGs? Good question. It is not a surprising word or term.
Mighty good.
They're a band. Good. You're good. You're
grand.
Good. Great. You know, not grand, not great. Google. It's not a modifier. It's actually a noun.
Guys.
Oh, no.
Guys. Pretty close.
Gents.
Pretty close. How about group?
Group.
Oh, man.
We're the group. Group. Okay. It's awesome.
So just.
Oh, so what's the M stand for?
Good question.
That's the next question.
Men group. Magnificent group.
I said something the other day about, wasn't that their famous tune was Green Onions, right? A lot of people know that song, and whoever I was talking to looked at me like I was from another planet. It's actually really sad. Good song.
We were all just looking at you the same way.
Fantastic.
We do that anyway.
Well, everybody knows the song. I don't think everybody knows it's called the Green Onion, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What was the Mercury automotive version of the Ford Pinto? Good trivia question for a good Detroiter.
Oh, crumb.
Pacer?
Wasn't the Pacer.
No, Pacer was AMC.
Started with a B.
Bobcat.
Yeah, it was the Bobcat. Well done. Well done.
No. The only reason I remember that, my very first car was the Mercury Lynx, which was the Mercury version of the Escort.
The Escort version, that's right.
Yeah, the Lynx. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
so that awesome. Was my first car.
So awesome. What are the two instruments depicted in the famous Archibald Willard painting, The Spirit of 76?
A fife.
Drum.
Fife. Well, yeah, very well done. Put these two guys together, win Jeopardy. And last but certainly not least, I've never heard it before, but I'd love to believe it. I want to believe. That's what Fox Mulder said. What famous snack food originated at Disneyland? Never heard this before. A very famous, ubiquitous snack food in the United States of America.
Cotton candy.
Not cotton candy. No, ubiquitous. As in, go over, you know, to Tradewinds and any party store, you're going to be able to find bags of it there.
Oh, like Funyuns or something like that?
You're getting closer.
Potato chips.
Doritos?
Doritos is what it says here.
Doritos?
Whoa. Disneyland.
Why Disneyland of all places?
I'm sure I don't know.
Thank you, Walt. Thank you.
The follow-up question is, where did the Doritos Loco Taco originate? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh. Taco Bell?
Totally buzzing about that. I mean, they think that's the greatest thing since something.
Doritos.
Yeah, Doritos maybe, right? We have some fabulous trivia questions. They're titled, Ask the Professor Questions to Stump the Panel, submitted by UDM's fantastic audiovisual department student staff located in the Briggs and Engineering buildings.
Nice. So, absolutely no coercion.
No.
Not at all.
None whatsoever.
Now, Chuck, have you read these?
No.
Oh, okay.
I like the hesitation, Chuck.
Turn them in. I gave them to Michael.
Really
my
good
students at least
here.
Seal them in an envelope. So no, trust me.
So these are questions all about elections in the university, in the United States. Fantastic. Yeah, it's been a long couple of months, folks. A long couple months. To what party did George Washington belong when he was elected first U.S. president in 1789? Federalist, anti-federalist, or Democratic Republican?
None of the above.
None of the above is correct. Absolutely.
He was not in a political party.
Mm-hmm. It says neither Washington nor his opponent Adams were affiliated with any party at the time of the first election in our country's history, probably because they were too busy forming the foundation of our country. Oh, I get it. In the second election of 1792... both men ran again with the same results, Washington won, but this time they were both aligned with the Federalist Party, at which point politics just became a gathering of the biggest party animals the public could find. Very interesting. And I love that joke. Nice joke, party animals. Don't feed the animals. Who received more electoral votes in the 1800 election, Thomas Jefferson or Aaron Burr?
It was Aaron Burr.
Yeah, it was Burr, actually. He was never president. It says, though Jefferson was ultimately declared the winner, there were multiple abnormalities in this electoral process. Burr originally received 74 electoral votes to Jefferson's 72, but only because one New York elector illegally cast both of his votes for Burr. When this was uncovered, a second vote was redirected to Jefferson, resulting in a tie. But even a tie was not the result that should have been. Republicans planned for one of their electors to abstain from the second vote in order to give Jefferson a one-vote advantage. The plan got botched. And the guy voted, resulting in a tie. You've got to be kidding me. This tie was settled by the vote of the outgoing House, which is the way it works in our country, in which case Jefferson emerged victorious. That's what it says. That is wild. I remember, if the Electoral College completely falls apart, the choosing of the next president goes to the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
Oh, that's if the tie is like 269 to 269 or something?
Something like that, yeah, exactly. It's kind of cool. Someday it should happen. Yeah. Just for kicks.
Can't we just have duels?
Yeah. Well, Aaron Burr.
Aaron Burr did have a duel. Yeah. I mean, work then.
So there was a candidate for president in the United States of America who received electoral votes after death. Who was this?
A candidate?
Totally crazy. I'll even give you, I believe we're leaning towards 1872 here.
Ulysses S. Grant?
It was Grant's election to win, but he was who he was running against that received electoral votes post-mortem.
Where's Jim Tubbs when we need him?
I know.
All right.
It says here it was 1872 Liberal Republican candidate Horace Greeley. President Ulysses S. Grant won by a landslide, 286 to 66 of electoral votes. What? But Greeley passed away between the popular vote and the voting of the Electoral College.
What party was he from?
Liberal Republican.
Could you repeat that?
The word Republican has taken on a completely different meaning.
I don't think you're ever going to hear that again.
In the confusion that followed, Greeley's electors split their votes among four different candidates. Oh, that's helpful. With Greeley still getting three electors. Congress subsequently disallowed the three votes for obvious reasons. I don't know. Namely, Greeley's lack of a pulse. But Greeley still goes down as the only candidate to die during the process. And while we think about that, we'll die to take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
The University of Detroit Tower Chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio program on which you match wits with University of Detroit professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. Questions today about Melville, Charles Dickens, Tolstoy, and the Cambrian rocks. How's that? Today's panel, I'm the man with all of the questions and most of the answers, Bill Raby. On my right, History Professor Frederick H. Hayes.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Professor Hayes. On my left, Russell McLaughlin of the University of Detroit Green Room Programs.
How do you do, I'm sure?
Yes. Thank you, Professor McLaughlin. And our middleman again, Professor John Mahoney of the University of Detroit English Faculty.
With approval of that, certainly. How do you do?
All of the questions used on this program are submitted by listeners. If you stump the experts, you will receive a subscription to a national magazine, The Atlantic, Harper's, or America. Now, this message from the University of Detroit. Thank you. This question is from Carl Budd, B-U-D-D, of Detroit, Michigan. Actually, he sent three questions, and again, we warn the listener, if you're going to send three, send them all in one batch.
You can't divide 16 by 3.
No, but you can divide the sheets on which he writes them into three.
Yeah, but each one was sent in a separate envelope, you see.
Yeah, so he's wasting 12 cents there.
Yeah. I see what you mean, Fred, yeah. I bow to that brilliant piece.
Send them all in one envelope.
Brilliant piece of economic mathematics.
In Charles Dickens' Pickwick Papers, what was the name of the law firm which represented the plaintiff, Mrs. Bardell?
Oh, that was, wait a minute, give me a little tiny clue, will you?
Well, you may have a little trouble seeing the whole thing clearly. It may be sort of misted over.
Dim and dimmer.
Wait a minute. Will you give me the first name of the firm?
Dodson.
These questions.
Dodson and Fogg. Right. Dodson and Fogg.
All right, half credit.
And we are back with some wonderful election trivia questions. Great questions, really. From your staff, Chuck, these are fantastic. Squeeze them again a couple weeks from now. We have a handful more of election trivia questions. Who was the only presidential candidate to receive an absolute majority of the popular vote, but still lost the election?
What is an absolute majority?
More That's than the question. 50%. I believe it means more than 50% of the vote. Mm-hmm.
Still lost the election?
Still lost.
Yeah, say Al Gore?
You know, the first thing it says is many of you will think the answer is Al Gore 2000. But Gore received only relative majority with 48.4% of the popular vote to Bush's 47.9%, which is still within error, unfortunately. Who was it? Let's see if I can give you a year here. 1876.
It was after Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't learned that from the last question.
Was it Cleveland?
No, but you're in the right wheelhouse.
Harrison.
The only losing candidate to receive more than 50% of the popular vote was Democrat Samuel J. Tilden, who ran against Republican Rutherford B. Hayes. In the Electoral College, 184 to 165, with 20 votes of dispute, Hayes won the presidency with less than 50%. That's wild.
Wow.
Pretty wild. You know, it says more than 50% for Tilden, too, but I don't remember. I mean, it could be anything. It could be 50.01% or something like that. I'm sure there's a great number of you out in listener land, which is why we have mathematicians on the panel, wondering how the Gore plus Bush votes could also equal less than 100%, but we'll let you wonder about that one for a while. Who is the last third-party candidate to win any electoral votes?
Good question.
Third-party. It wasn't. No, it wasn't. He didn't win any electoral votes.
John Anderson?
No. No, it was 68.
Who's the guy with the...
Agnew?
Jerry?
Wallace. Independent George Wallace.
George Wallace.
Yep, 1968. Wow. Doesn't say how many, but I'm assuming it wasn't enough.
Isn't he on... Did he pass? Who's the one who's in hospital?
Minnesota's governor, I think.
One of those. Is it McGovern? Or
Wallace
McGovern,
was I think.
Wallace was not from Minnesota. He was from the South.
Not Jesse the Body Ventura.
No, he's actually quite alive. I have a friend who live in Minneapolis, and they just posted a picture of him speaking at some event, and he looks like a governor should never look like.
Death warm rope, like, or in drag?
Like who's that? With like long, big gray hair.
He looks like who's that? Ventura?
Yes.
Wow.
He's still
ex Navy SEAL, isn't he?
Yes. Ex Navy SEAL and ex pro wrestler.
And in what was the movie? Predator.
Predator, yeah, the first Tom one. Reed.
Who was he in Predator?
He was
one of the guys that got killed, yeah.
He was a caricature of himself. Profs, which election featured the most lopsided vote in U.S. history? And you can interpret that any way you wish.
George Washington.
It wasn't.
No, Reagan.
Reagan, 84. Yeah. Broke every election record imaginable in his race against Walter Mondale, who received only 13 electors from D.C. and his native Minnesota. Reagan received almost 60% of the popular vote, defeating Mondale by 17 million votes, my gosh, and garnering a record 525 electoral votes from 49 states.
You remember Mondale's famous quote after that when his concession speech? All my life, I wanted to run for president in the worst possible way. And I did.
And I just, you know what I remember most? Besides the fact that that coincided with a wonderful, wonderful Detroit Tigers World Series win of my youth, that we were given maps of the United States. I was in the fourth grade, and we had to color them in based on the electoral projections. It was what you wanted? Yeah, that's it. So funny. The House of Representatives, and we already talked about it once, has selected the president only once since 1804. Who is the winner in that election?
So in 1804 or after?
I think it was after, but not very long after. Who was it? So the House actually selected who the president would be?
John Quincy Adams?
It was. Quincy Adams had 84 electoral votes of the 131 needed for a majority. Very interesting. If that could happen in modern day, just blow my mind. Now, the last few presidential elections, we've almost been split almost directly down the middle, at least in popular vote, and how that gets reflected in our horribly, horribly, horribly broken system of using electors. That's it. I'm done with my soapbox. Statistically speaking, it's not proper. I actually feel for the people of Wyoming. You know how many times Obama and Romney have visited the state of Wyoming in the last year and a half?
Probably never.
Zero. Yeah. Zero times. Name three presidents that were elected by winning the electoral vote, but not the popular vote.
Bush. George W. Bush.
That's not what it says here.
The Supreme Court gave him that right.
Okay. So Adams, Quincy Adams. We already talked about Rutherford B. Hayes. And one more.
Any clues as to the era?
Yeah.
It's only about the hints.
Okay, yeah. Okay, president without winning the electoral vote, does that include after assassination?
Yeah, like Gerald Ford.
Presidents were elected by winning the electoral vote, but not the popular.
All
right. It says Quincy Adams was elected president despite not winning the popular vote or the electoral vote. Okay, we've established that, 1824. 1876, we talked about Hayes and Tilden. In 1888, somebody received 233 electoral votes to Grover Cleveland's 168. Winning the presidency, but lost the popular vote by more than 90,000 votes.
That's not a lot, actually.
So, Hoopy Cleveland?
That's right. That's it. Big old beard.
In 1888.
Harrison?
Yeah, it was Harrison. It was Benjamin Harrison.
Yep. All right.
It wasn't George.
Right. Yeah. For the record, it says, in 2000, George W. Bush was declared the winner of the general election and became the 43rd president, but he didn't win the popular vote either. Al Gore holds the distinction, garnering about 540,000 more votes than Bush. However, Bush won the electoral vote, 271 to 266.
He won the hanging Chad votes.
The hanging Chad votes, yeah.
Dangling votes.
Dangling Chad.
Who is the only president who is elected to serve on non-consecutive terms?
Was it Tyler? No. Who was that?
Was it Cleveland?
Cleveland, yeah. Yep.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right.
Yep. Remember Grandpa Simpson on The Simpsons remarking that Grover Cleveland once spanked him on two non-consecutive occasions? That's how old he was. Yep. He says Barack Obama is our 44th president, but actually there's only been 43 presidents. Cleveland was elected for two non-consecutive terms and therefore is counted twice as 22 and 24, which is weird. That's just totally weird, if you ask me. It says here for 2 years not the Cleveland. Nation was run by a president and a vice president who were not elected by the people. Who was that person?
Repeat that again.
For 2 years the nation was run by a president and a vice president who were not elected by the people.
Gerald Ford.
And
who Nelson Rockefeller.
Yep. After Vice President Spiro Agnew resigned in 73, Nixon appointed Ford as vice president. Nixon resigned the following year, left Ford as president, and Ford's appointed vice president, Rockefeller, second in line. Neither Johnson had a VP. Jefferson had a VP, but he was missing most of the term. What the
Johnson's
Where's my vice president? No, Jefferson's, apparently. Jefferson had a VP, but he was missing most of the term. How odd. One president left the White House and 9 years later became Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Harding?
Nope, not Harding.
Oh, who was it?
But in the wheelhouse, Taft. Yes, William Howard Taft. Taft was appointed Chief Justice by the Supreme Court of the Supreme Court. So pleased was he with the career change, he wrote, "I don't remember that I was ever president." How interesting!
Wow,
hardcore.
Nor do most school children.
Or professors. How is the Chief Justice chosen?
I think that they have to be on the Supreme Court, and then they choose amongst themselves, don't they? But then it has to be affirmed by Congress.
No.
I'm fully expecting the Canadian to school us on this.
No, wasn't Chief Justice Roberts? Wasn't he just like?
But he was the last one on.
He was a justice,
and then but then he's a chief judge.
No, I think he became the chief when he joined, didn't he?
Congress affirms who becomes a justice, but I think they go into enclave and they choose who their leader is.
Arm wrestle in the back room.
Well, in Canada they have a snowshoe race and the tie is broken by curling. I think.
There you go. You still have a chance.
Thanks.
Which of these four presidents is not portrayed on paper money? Jefferson, Madison, Cleveland, Wilson.
Cleveland,
Wilson,
Cleveland.
Wilson is on the $100,000 bill. Cleveland is on the $1,000 bill.
No. Like I'm ever going to see one of those.
How come I never heard this song? It's all about the Clevelands, baby.
So it must be. Well, Jefferson is on
$2 bill.
It's on the $5.
$2 bill.
Two?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe Jefferson's, it's their version of the trick question. They say Jefferson here. Because
he's reaching for his
bill.
Wallet.
I'm pulling my $1,000 bills out of my wallet.
Hold on. He's going to check the $50,000 bills in his wallet. Fantastic. But we've run out of time. We got to say goodbye, Professor Chow.
Goodbye.
Professor Roach.
Goodbye.
Professor Moneybags.
Goodbye.
Professor Boats.
Yeah, it's all about the Washingtons in my house.
Professor Hokett.
Goodbye.
And now these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
Email your questions to atp@udmercy.edu, or you may fax them to 313-993-1166. Attention, Ask the Professor.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Adam Winbigler and technically directed by Michael Jason. And our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.